Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Tubeck. On today's podcast, I talk to Ellen Spragans, author and editor of the Letters to My Younger Self series of books. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubeck. Today's guest is Ellen Spragans, keynote speaker and editor of the Letters to My Younger Self series of books. Ellen, thanks for joining us.
You are so welcome. I'm enjoying being here.
Ellen, you've become an expert on helping women find and develop their inner talents. What inspired you to go down this path?
Well, actually, you know, I had an inspiration from the loss of my mother. I was a journalist for 25 years, and early on, I lost my mom very suddenly, and even though it took many years for this idea to percolate, the idea of asking smart, talented, accomplished women what they wish they'd known at a pivotal moment in their life eventually came to me while I was working away on all my stories. And that concept really translated into the three books that you mentioned, which all use the concept of writing, asking, and working with well-known, smart women on writing a letter to their younger self at a time when they struggled with something. So I would say that the inspiration really came from my mom, and the reason I continued it is that it turns out to be this amazing device that is not only great for uncovering some hard-won wisdom by people, you know, like Madeleine Albright, Queen Noor, Paula Deen, Olympia Dukakis, but it also is a very cathartic experience for the person that I worked with. So now I actually do this in companies and lots of other venues because it kind of connects women together and helps them understand and learn from each other in a unique way.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask about that too. I mean, now you're talking about you losing your mother suddenly. Fortunately, I'm happy to say both of my parents are still alive, but I can understand somebody can be completely overwhelmed by a loss, and especially one that's sudden. How old were you at the time when you lost your mother?
Well, I was 32, and she was 60. Mm-hmm. And I was not a young child, and I know that there are many more horrible, profound losses that occur for people who are younger and lose both their parents. And so I feel lucky to have had her as long as I did. But what happened is that as my life continued on, I understood that there were sort of new facets to grief. Every time I had a struggle, a number of different struggles in my life, I wished for her to be there and for her guidance and advice, and she wasn't there. And so slowly I began to realize some of my struggles were actually similar to what she had struggled with in her life. She had lost her mother at 20. She had had 5 miscarriages and then had 5 kids. And it created a little paradigm shift in my head where I suddenly understood, you know, this is not just all about me. And this, I began to think of her as a woman making her way in the world, and what would she have wished she'd known or done. And from that kind of realization, eventually I got to this idea of asking other women, really interesting, smart women, what they wish they'd known at a difficult time in their life.
Right. Let me talk about success for a little bit here, too, before I want to go more into your books and the whole concept of crafting letters to your younger self. I want to ask first about how are women different than men in the aspect of finding and developing their inner talents?
It's really interesting to go down this path of the contrast between women and men. And I, as a result of working on these books and with so many women and speaking to women's leadership groups, I've really discovered that there are some very important differences, and I don't mean this in a way that we're bashing men or anything like that, but just it's important to understand the subtle kinds of variations, I think, to really get over them. So one key thing is women are really good at putting other people first in general. I mean, they put
right.
their bosses ahead of their own interests, they put their husbands, their children, and that is a laudable instinct and set of behavior, but it also sometimes means they chip themselves out of really nurturing their ambitions and their talents enough. They don't right. really think of themselves as deserving a place at the table, in a way, or take their own modest interests seriously enough. I think I was one of those people, in a way. And so I think that's a little bit harder. I also think there is an extra layer that women really want to have in their professional goals, which is not only where their talents lie, but where is their purpose? What is their purpose? What is the thing that really matters to them? And I'm not saying men don't have that, but I think for women, not having it or not having identified it is a bigger hurdle. It hangs them up more in proceeding to the next step professionally.
No, I could definitely see that. So now, what do women need to know about success? You know, once they've discovered what they can do, what do they need to know in order to take that next step?
Well, this is so interesting. I just wanted to mention one perspective
sure.
that opens up a whole interesting conversation. Barbara Annis is a woman who studies and reports and consults on gender differences for companies. And so she has surveyed thousands of male and female executives asking them to define success. She has reported that if you ask women, executive women, to define success, they say success is accomplishing something important by working together. If you ask men executives to define success, they say winning.
Yeah. The hell with everybody else. We don't need this together stuff.
So now it's really interesting because, you know, I think that plays in really closely to some of the things I've discovered. Most corporate cultures, by definition, use a model of success, of leadership, that is male. And that's no surprise. Men probably founded the company, and men have run most companies for decades or longer. That's just the way industry developed in this country. And a male model of leadership actually does work for some women, but it does not feel authentic to many women. So if you're in this company with this male, all you sort of, the culture rewards these male attributes of leadership, you know, they may try and ape those, and some of it may work, but some of it just really doesn't feel like they're being them. So the upshot is, what I think I have discovered is that women have to create their own model of leadership for themselves. So it's hard and it's extra work, and then they have to start practicing it. And that is why one of my so-called rules for success that I put in the introduction of my most recent book is be selfish. And that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Of course, I don't really want you to forget all about your kids and your husband mm-hmm. and everyone else in your life, but do take responsibility for keeping a fire lit under your own ambition and what matters to you in terms of what you stand for in the world, what you want to do, the kind of picture you have of what you could do. Yeah, keep that alive. And so that is one definition of success, or one element of success. The other ones, I'll just run through them quickly. They're they're all a little subversive, so you have to understand that. The second one is be bad. Don't be the good girl. Don't do your work with your head down just waiting to be rewarded. You've got to be a little bad. Be dyslexic. That is a very strange one, I'm sure, to be hearing, but I kind of put that in there because three of the women in this recent book, including Barbara Corcoran, who's on the Shark Tank, Bobby Brown, and Nancy Brinker, who founded Susan J. Komen for the Cure, all had learning issues. School was really hard for them. They were terrible students. Bobby Brown told me her parents never in a million years, when she was in high school, would have expected her to be a success. They struggled so much with the traditional way to go, they had to find their own route. And their own route was really unique. And I think that they're an extreme example. We don't all have learning disabilities, but we all have something we're not so great at. So if we kind of go boldly forth with the things we are good at, even if they're not the right path, the normal path, I think that that's good. And then the last two so-called rules are study your gut, your instincts, what your gut tells you. Really try and learn how to read that. And the last one is don't be men in pink. And that's what we were just talking about.
Right,
don't use a male model of leadership on your own.
Yeah, and I could definitely see, you know, going back to what you were talking about, how females tend to be different than men in regards to how they view things. And, you know, sometimes they tend to put themselves first, or put, like you said, put your boss first, put your spouse first, whereas guys tend to be more selfish. So I could see rules one and two, you really have to strike home to women who may not fully get that. You do need to be selfish in some cases. You do need to think about yourself and stop maybe trying to, you don't want to say, you know, not try to be equal with somebody else or try to bring another person on board, but you really need to think about yourself, and you know, because other things can work themselves out after that.
Yeah, and I truly don't want anyone to use selfish behavior.
No.
But it's really a way of overstating it, because women not only put other people first, but they really feel accountable. They are the ones that have to make their kids happy and their husband happy and their parents happy. And this is saying you need to be pleasing yourself. Don't deny, don't self-denial, no manic scurrying to keep everybody else happy at your expense. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Right, understood. Okay, well, let's talk about the books. Now, we were just talking about your inspiration, you know, losing your mother at age 32. So what got you started about, you know, talking to other people about it, and how this all come down to celebrities contributing their letters to their younger selves?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, because I thought of this idea, meaning I thought of a book of letters revealing hard-won life wisdom while I was a journalist, and I thought, wow, that is such a good idea, meaning I'd like to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to my work, and 3 months later, that idea bubbled up again, and again, I thought, wow, that would be such a great book to read, and then I went back to my work. And so after a year, the idea bubbled up, and I said, maybe I'm supposed to do this. It was really slow on the uptake. But it's really turned into such an interesting journey, because I went after women. You know, obviously, publishers would like a book to sell, and so they really were not interested in your great woman down the street who's done amazing things and what her letter would say. They were interested in celebrities. And for my part, I really wanted people whose work I knew something about, that I admired, or something about their life story. And I really wanted breadth. I wanted women who were in all kinds of fields, politicians, actresses, CEOs, you name it, and all ages. I got a pretty good span of all of that, although I do wish I had gotten women in their 80s and 90s writing to themselves in their 60s or 70s. That just, you know, would have been that much better. But the process was that I actually interviewed them all and worked on that. We collaborated on the letters. So about half of those interviews were in person. Really wonderful, amazing interviews, especially after being a journalist and talking to people about earnings per share. It was really fun to talk about Paula Deen about being an agoraphobic for 20 years. And
how do you build up this list of celebrities? Is this just becoming, you know, being a journalist? I know you have probably a better list of contacts than a normal person would have. Is it just a matter of reaching out to people that you've talked to in the past, or working through your publisher, say, hey, you happen to know Maya Angelou? Is there a way I can talk to
them? Yeah, it would be nice to think that all of that would have really worked, because really I think there may be a handful of people who ended up being in one, you know, the three books, who kind of were friends of friends of friends of friends kind of thing. And it is amazing who people know, but just because there is that contact of some sort doesn't really mean that they'll say yes either. So it was a huge process. Celebrity wrangling was a big, big deal, especially for the first book.
I can imagine.
A lot of people, you know, said no. And frankly, the idea doesn't reach the ultimate person I was trying to reach necessarily. Of course, it reaches their publisher or their publicist or record label. You know, I've tried every approach that I could, because I wanted to get through. But, you know, so it was tough, but I will say I really have to salute the women who participated, because, first of all, they're showing themselves not in their glamorous moments, you know, triumphant moments. They're showing themselves at vulnerable moments when something was tough or they were failing. So they resonated with the idea that maybe something in their life would be helpful. And you could spin this, but it's pretty hard to spin a letter to your younger self when you're having a hard time, because what you really feel is a lot of compassion towards that younger you. And it's very moving.
It's a pretty serious thing. It's a pretty serious method of self-reflection. I mean, like you're saying, you're very vulnerable.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's interesting because I have done this mostly with women, but I now conduct seminars at companies. Like I've done them for Genentech and Microsoft and Goldman Sachs. And a lot of interesting companies where I work with three highly regarded, you know, fairly much superstars within that company on a letter to their younger self. And then I speak a little bit and we present the letters at an event.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly I've done that with women, but with men, I have done it a few times. And it's been interesting because they have really, I think, risen to the challenge. There is one guy, I loved his letter to his younger self. He was someone who always had the right answer for everything. You know, he's the smartest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So in his personal life and at work, that really was part of his identity. People would turn to him and kind of want his opinion. And so he just, as a practice, really liked it and had to be right all the time. And so he wrote a letter to his younger self early on, probably 5 years into his marriage, telling himself it's really not important to always be the one that's right in a marriage because you're gonna really hurt that relationship. I thought that was a very brave letter to confess and to write because he's airing it in front of a bunch of his colleagues, you know?
Right, right. Now, I know you've had to have positive feedback on this because you've got, what, three books on the subject now?
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, going back to what we're talking about and just trying to get the celebrities, what was there a moment or just like one celebrity where the whole concept just snowballed and it really started to take off? I mean, you know, it's like, oh, wow, somebody's now starting to talk about this. They're now telling their celebrity friends. Now they're interested in doing this. Or was it a just constant struggle to constantly get celebrities?
Well, I would say it was more of a constant struggle or challenge.
Okay.
After the first book, it was not quite so hard. But I do have one wonderful, amazing story about a celebrity who put me in touch with not one, not two, but three other celebrities whose letters are all in the third book. Trish McAvoy, who is just an incredible woman, a businesswoman, and a real sweetheart. I had gotten to know her a little bit, and she was. We were working on a letter for the third book, and I mentioned this wish list I had of people that I'd like to reach. And she said, well, she sent me back an email and said, you know, I think I could help you with three of those. listen to this list. Susie Orman, Barbara Walters.
Wow.
And Susie Welch, Jack Welch's wife.
Okay.
And sure enough, all three ended up, you know, spending time, and they have their letters in the book. So really, that was
right.
Trish knew these three from completely different experiences. So I don't think they all know each other, but in this case, her contacts really did help me so much, and her generosity.
That's fantastic, and especially, I guess, with Barbara Walters, too. Something like that gathers steam, then, you know, she's happy to do it, and that has a lot of power right there.
Yeah, I think it probably for the publicists and certainly for the women themselves, if they have a chance to see what other people have done and what the published book looked like, as in the case of the first book, it gives you some confidence about the quality of the work and the insights, that it's not some kind of, I don't know, I guess superficial concept that's not going to really reflect well on them.
Right, understood. So of all these letters that you've collected over the years, what has been the most impressive that you found? And that could be, you know, not necessarily just celebrities. It could just be, you know, other people in your lives who may have helped you with this. Was there one that really stood out to you as being very inspirational and like, wow, this is really good?
You know, I cannot resist mentioning, I have so many letters that I love, and I actually fall a little bit in love with all these people, all these women when I work with them. But because of the news events of the recent week, I cannot fail to mention Ann Curry, who was
yes,
a letter in my first book. And in fact, I would say the mantra from her letter is one that I actually repeated to myself quite a bit at different points after the first book was published. I'll just tell you briefly, she...
Well, let me give you some background to the listeners, too.
Okay.
Ann Curry, how long was she with the Today Show? Was about 15 years?
Yeah, a long time.
Long time. She recently just stepped down from the Today Show. So she had a very tearful goodbye that she gave just the other day. So, so if you have interviewed her before, you're probably going to wind up interviewing again 10 years from now. So what would you say to Ann Curry of 2012, right?
Yeah, that could be. Well, she, in the book, which this book came out in 2006, so I worked with her probably in 2004 or something like that on this letter. But she grew up in the Northwest, and she is the daughter of a man from Colorado and a Japanese immigrant. So she did not look in her environment like everyone else. People used to say, are you Alaskan? Are you Iranian? So she always felt a little bit like an outsider. And she actually came to feel very okay with that. But then she went into this field, television broadcasting, where your image, your appearance is just everything.
Right.
And she was entering at a time when, again, women were extremely rare in a Medford, Oregon newsroom, all male. And she desperately tried hard at that time to fit in. She cut off her hair. She wore those floppy bow ties. And kind of lost her sense of self, you know, while she's trying so hard to fit in. And it's, you know, there are a few layers to why that was so difficult. But the upshot, the main message she was giving to herself, her younger self, is it's time to be bold about who you really are. And I love that, because who we really are, we sometimes feel like we can't really show. And I'm thinking that's probably hard for her right now. You know, she has shown who she really is in the Today Show, I think, and is not getting at least NBC's approval for
right,
it.
Right, right. The full love from NBC, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Full love.
Now, in addition to the books, you've also taken the Letters to My Younger Self concept onto the speaking circuit, hosting some seminars and retreats. Tell me about how your seminars work.
Yes, they are so interesting. As I mentioned, when I started down this road, I had no idea that the concept of writing a letter to your younger self would live outside of just reading the letters in a book. But I discovered there's this fascinating dynamic that occurs when you kind of do this live. So one dynamic is the women, most often women, who I work with on these letters to their younger self feel incredibly cathartic. They have a cathartic and healing experience from the letters. So I've worked with lots of women in two main ways. One is in a corporate seminar where the organizers of an event assign me three women, usually very highly regarded women, and I work with them on a letter that we then present to an audience of women, usually a women's interest network or a leadership initiative at the company. And then the other way is really fascinating. I take a whole room full of women, the audience, say, I've done this with up to 600 women, and I lead them step by step through the process of creating their own letters to their younger selves, sharing them with the other people at their table, and then each table votes on which letter they want to be read to the whole room. And that is an amazing, highly charged, really great bonding experience. So those are the two main ways I do that. And I have actually a third sort of experience that's coming up in October, which is a retreat at Canyon Ranch in Lenox, Massachusetts.
Ah, Lenox. That's up in the Berkshires, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a beautiful spa, very famous. The mm-hmm. original one is in Arizona, and then this one has been operating for a long time. So the leaves will be turning, and they gave us a really nice discount. So I'll be leading a smaller group through the process of writing their letters and sharing them over. It's a 4-day, 3-night retreat. Of course, most of the time you have the spa at your disposal and lots of classes and fabulous meals. And it's going to be a really great group of women. I've already got a picture of a few of them that will be coming. So I invite anyone that's interested in that and having this experience of exploring yourself to please join in. You can learn more about that on my website, which is letterstomyyoungerself.com.
Yeah, and you said the leaves will be turning up there too. So what is that, about the second week in October?
Yeah, it's October 14th.
There you go. So I know way too much about the Berkshires. My wife and I used to go up there all the time before we had kids. You know, now with kids, they're a little less interested in watching the leaves and on a relaxing vacation. It's all about where the water slides are.
Well, I went last year for the first time and to Canyon Ranch, and it was so spectacular. It's a beautiful venue, and the vibe of the place is extremely accepting and educational and experimental. There's no ideology. You don't go there feeling like, oh, I have to act this way, I have to be vegan, I have to anything like that. It's really up to you to decide what you're going to focus on at that during your time there. So I really liked it a lot. And then I also will be leading the first ever group of women who own businesses through a year of monthly meetings, kind of like a mastermind. I don't know if you know about those, structured the way that YEO structures it. They have a famous kind of peer mentoring program where you have some very specific business goals, and this is a group designed to help you achieve them over the course of once-a-month meetings for a year. So I'll be leading that starting in September, and there is room for only one or two other people, but if anybody that is listening is interested, I'd love to know about that too.
Okay. Well, Ellen, I'm going to wrap it up on that note. I want to thank you again for joining us today.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
That was Ellen Spragans, keynote speaker and editor of the Letters to My Younger Self series of books. You can find the Letters to My Younger Self books at most major online and offline booksellers. You can also visit her Letters to My Younger Self website at letterstomyyoungerself.com. That's also where you can learn more about the October retreat up in the Berkshires. This is Tom Dubeck, and thanks for joining us in the Consumerism Commentary Podcast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubeck, Jay Frosting, and Luke Landis. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast was founded by Luke Landis.